This is the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 60.
I tell you what we do though, that I think is extremely effective in generating future purchases for us, mm-hmm. is we have really good drip systems.
Okay.
And for anybody who's out there looking for motivated sellers, you will buy half of your deals on the front, on the initial contact, but the other half, if not more, will come months and years later in the follow-up.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, my friends, Alex Pardo here with the Flip Empire Show. I'm happy to have you on. And I got a special guest by the name of Ken Corsini on. And if you guys don't know Ken, he's from GAinvesting.com. And he's got a fantastic podcast called Deal Farm Podcast, which a couple of months ago I started listening to. And he provides a lot of great content that can help you in your real estate business. He's got some awesome experts on. And so I definitely want to encourage you to check it out on iTunes, Deal Farm Podcast. And he's actually currently, which I just recently found out, he's in the process of filming for HGTV, a show by the name of Flipping the South. So Ken, that's definitely, before we get going, I want to find out a little bit more about that at some point here during our conversation. But guys, just so you know, Ken is somebody who has been in the business a long time. He definitely knows his stuff. And that's the main reason I wanted to get him on. We have a lot of similar friends, and this is actually the first time that Ken and I are speaking. So I'm actually excited to learn more about his business and what he's doing. One of the things that we're going to be really diving into is how Ken is acquiring deals in his market in Georgia. So we're really going to be, you know, peeling back the onion, so to speak, on lead generation and how to drive more leads into our funnel, and then how we can acquire more properties, which I think is something that, you know, people tend to have a challenge with, and people can always have more leads in their business. So I know this is something that you're going to get a lot of value from. So Ken, man, before we really dive into it, maybe if you can kind of fill in some of the gaps and let us know how you got started in your business, and then if we can fast forward to where you are now in your business.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm excited to be on the show. I'm excited also to have you on my show as well, right after.
Yeah, man,
this.
I'm looking forward to it.
The timing's great.
Yep.
So I got started in 2005. It's funny because I was just looking at your website. I saw that you quit a good job as well to get into real estate, and I did the same thing. I was working for a Fortune 500 company, had a really good career there if I wanted to stay put, and I just didn't. I had the entrepreneurial bug and just needed to get out and work for myself. And I loved real estate. I thought it was a great conduit to be working for myself. Little did I know that 2 years after I was going to jump into real estate, that the market was going to crash. But it actually ended up being the best thing that could have happened to me, because I really didn't catch my stride in terms of buying and building a portfolio of properties until after the market crashed. So all these people in my market, I'm in the Atlanta market, were losing their shirt. They had, you know, bought all these properties, and all of a sudden they found themselves upside down. And literally it was like shooting fish in a barrel to buy properties here. Yeah. And for me, I got stung on one or two properties. That was it. It wasn't crazy. And all my competition disappeared.
Yeah.
So here I am, and I sort of found myself putting together the turnkey model, which is where, if you're not familiar with that term, it's where we, you know, find the distressed properties, we fix them up, we put tenants in place, and then we sell them to other investors, typically out-of-state investors, turnkey, so that the property's already been stabilized, there's already a tenant in place, it's already cash flowing.
Right.
And so that's really what launched my business, is flying out to California, speaking in front of RIAs out there, getting investors that didn't know anything about Atlanta, didn't realize you could buy a property fixed up for $70,000 with great cash flow. And I just built a base of investors that were buying properties from me in Atlanta. And that's really what launched my business. I mean, I worked that model for a good 8-9 years, and still, even to this day, still sell to investors.
That's awesome. And I know that one of the benefits with turnkey model, are you selling these properties at or very close to retail value?
Yeah, we do for the most part, because by the time you do a legitimate rehab on a property and really bring it up to speed so you can hand over a good product, you're selling close to market value, maybe a hair under, but you're also finding the tenant. You know, all the headaches of the rehab have been taken away from the investor. An investor, you know, if he's really buying somewhat based on reputation too. We've had to build a good reputation. So they know they're buying a good house with a vetted tenant that's going to, you know, be a long-term investment for them.
Yeah. So man, I know this is a bit off topic here, but I think this is actually a topic in an area that we haven't really focused on here on the Flip Empire show. When it comes to the turnkey model, if you can maybe talk a little bit about what are some of the pitfalls that investors have made or even some mistakes that you have made in working that model? And how can we go if somebody has never gotten into the turnkey model, you know, marketing and looking for distressed properties, that doesn't change, right? There's a million ways to market. So we're always going to be generating leads. But rather than wholesaling a property, how can we get into fixing, flipping, and then doing the turnkey model?
So really, you have to be in a market that lends itself, I think, to turnkey. Not every market you're going to be able to buy properties that really make sense. Because my competition in the turnkey space is not necessarily another turnkey guy in Atlanta, because there's not many of them. It's really more, it's turnkey folks in other markets. And other markets, there's better opportunities. Uh-huh. Especially some of your Midwestern B-class markets, the Ohio.
Yep.
You know, Memphis is a big turnkey market. Indianapolis is a big turnkey market. But because you can buy properties really discounted with very strong price to rent ratios. So, you know, I wouldn't tell a guy living in Southern California, go out there and chase the turnkey model. It would never work.
Exactly. I was just going to say in a market like maybe Arizona or, you know, Phoenix, Arizona or Southern California, where, you know, probably the average median price is maybe 500 to 700,000. I mean, that turnkey model obviously is not going to work with those kind of numbers.
Nope. It used to. It's funny because I've got some buddies at Cherry Pick Investments that are out of Phoenix. And back in the day, I mean, 5-6 years ago, they were selling turnkey properties in Phoenix.
Nice.
And then the prices just got out of control. It didn't make sense anymore. The market just got too strong.
Right, right. Got it. So are you said you're still, because you worked that model for about 8 years. What's your primary focus now? I know you're big into fix and flip. What's the percentage of properties that you guys are wholesaling versus fixing and flipping in your business?
You know, it's every year it's a little different, because every year the market in Atlanta is a little bit different. You've got different strengths. It's, you know, different buyer demand. And so right now, the market that we're in, we're probably 85% fix and flip.
Okay.
Maybe 5% wholesale. And then the other 10% would be a turnkey.
Got it.
But in addition to that, I mean, outside just the investor space, we're also doing new construction. That's not something we've done in here until the last year or so. Mm-hmm. And that's just because, again, the market we're in, there's a real high demand for properties and we're low on inventory.
Yeah.
So we've gotten into the new construction space. We're actually building a 20-house subdivision right up the street right now, $500,000 homes. I never would have done that 3 or 4 years ago.
Sweet, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, but right now there's a demand for it. So we're going to capitalize on that demand.
You know, and you touch on a subject that's so important. It's something that we've covered on some previous episodes is you know, to be a successful real estate investor, and I'm sure you can agree to this, Ken, you have to have your finger on the pulse of the market. You have to know what's going on, because if you're working the same model and the same strategy that you were working back in 2006, 2007, you're probably going to lose your shirt. So I think it's extremely important to understand market cycles and know, you know, keep an eye on inventory, because if there's a lack of inventory, you're going to need to tweak and adjust your strategy versus if it's, you know, a buyer's market and there might be a lot of inventory out there. So I just want to highlight that it's extremely important that if you want to succeed in this business, you have to understand where we're at in the market cycle. And, you know, it's understanding your market, because where you are in a market cycle in, you know, Atlanta, Georgia could be completely different from across the country. So it's not one size fits all. And I just want to kind of highlight that. But I guess, you know, Ken, transitioning into marketing and lead generation, because again, that's a very popular subject. And let's be honest, who can't use more leads? What are some of the things that you guys are doing in your business to generate leads? And then, you know, let's maybe transition into the lead conversion. So acquiring more properties.
You know, so it's a perfect segue from the market cycle conversation, because the market cycles, in my opinion, dictate your lead generation. Because having been in this business now 11 years, it's amazing how from year to year, our strategy for acquiring properties changes literally year over year.
It does. Yeah.
Because things are changing so rapidly, and this industry we're in is so dynamic that even just competition can change, you know, the way you're acquiring properties, or, you know, demand or appreciation, all these different factors. Really, you have to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening in your market in every aspect, to stay relevant, to make sure you're buying the right properties, but also to make sure that you're marketing correctly. So, you know, a couple years ago, we bought everything off of MLS. Mm-hmm. And then we transitioned. We had a lot of luck with HUD. Well, then the hedge funds came into town and literally started buying up everything. And so that kind of went away. And then, so we've transitioned here in the last couple of years to now we're very much, you know, direct marketing, where we didn't used to have to do that, but now we have to do that. And that's even changed because, you know, the ballrooms are filled with people trying to figure out how to get into the space, and everybody's sending postcards to non-owner ops, and it's becoming a little bit crowded. So you have to sort of stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So are you guys, cause man, it's so funny that you said that. We have, I'm realizing as we speak that we have so much in common. Cause I remember in 2012 and 13, we were crushing it off the MLS. You know, we pretty much had no marketing overhead. And then in 2014, 15, it got a lot tougher to do deals off the MLS. And, you know, we moved to direct mail marketing. And it's funny cause now when our acquisitions managers go meet with a seller, it's not uncommon for that person to have 15 to 30 yellow attention postcards. And, you know, so it's like, I'm constantly pushing my team, and I'd like to kind of hear your thoughts on this. I'm trying to figure out, how can we not have to compete on price, right? Because everybody's buying cash. Everybody's taking care of the closing cost and closing on your date. So, you know, one of the things that we're striving to do is, what's our USP? How can we differentiate ourselves from every other postcard out there being sent to a seller? So I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts, because I think you touched on what a lot of people are experiencing is that, you know, the ballrooms are filled up and everybody's sending direct mail, and it's still a great way to get deals because we still do a lot of deals from it. It's just getting a bit more challenging to kind of cut through the clutter.
Yeah. You know, I've sort of decided, I just have resolved it with the fact that we're going to have a lot of people out there marketing to the same people we are. And there's a lot of newbies in Atlanta that I found are tripping over good deals. So I made a decision about a year ago that, you know what, instead of seeing myself as a competitor against all them, I'm going to see myself as a solution for them. And so there's a ton of wholesalers in Atlanta, and they're tripping over deals, and most of them don't know what to do with the deal once they find it. Mm-hmm. So we've made a concerted effort. I've literally hired a full-time person a year ago whose only job is to uncover every new wholesaler in town.
Okay.
And literally, we scrape Craigslist every day. And we call every wholesaler that we've never met before, we put them on our drip list. Mm-hmm. Because I want that wholesaler to know that, hey, I'm your buyer. When you find that deal that you found before I found it, which is going to happen, you bring that deal to me. And I'll make sure you get paid well, but I want to make sure there's enough meat on the bone.
Yeah.
So we do buy a lot of properties from wholesalers. Now, I'll look at 30 properties from different wholesalers to buy one potentially.
Yeah.
But you know, they're there. There's people uncovering deals that I did not uncover, and I still want in on those deals if I can find them. So we source a lot of deals through wholesalers still.
Awesome. Awesome. And then what percentage would you say of the deals that you're acquiring are from wholesalers versus like your own direct mail marketing?
Yeah, maybe a quarter okay. of our deals probably come from wholesalers. I mean, I'll run through the list. So we buy from wholesalers. We run social media campaigns. We still put up bandit signs. We send out yellow letters. We send out postcards. We scrape Craigslist. We scrape Zillow. We still offer on HUD. We make offers on all the auction sites. And we occasionally still pop an REO off the MLS.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally at this point in our evolvement in our company, it's just all hands on deck, man. Yeah. As many fishing poles as you can have in the lake to find a deal, the better.
Yeah. So speaking of, man, what does your team look like right now? Like, how big is your team and what are some of the different positions that you have? Because obviously, you know, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of somebody who's getting started, or maybe somebody that's done a handful of deals or less. And it might sound overwhelming to them to think, well, you know, how am I going to get a system for direct mail going? And then how am I going to target MLS properties and HUD and this and that? And I think that's one of the things that stops people from getting going and building momentum is that they just get bogged down and overwhelmed with everything they feel they have to do. Obviously, you didn't build this overnight. So what does your team look like? And what, I guess, what would you share with people that are in the process of now building a team so they can scale a business?
Sure. Our team's, I think we've got 11 or 12 people right now full-time in the office. And everybody's kind of fills a different role. I mean, I've got two inside acquisition people, one outside acquisition person, I've got a general manager who sort of handles things when I'm not in the office. I've got two project managers that are handling our construction. We also have an in-house brokerage, so I have a couple agents in-house that handle our dispositions. I've got a full-time agent whose only job is to put tenants in our properties.
Okay.
And then I've got a full-time agent whose only job is to continue making offers on MLS for us. So to your question, though, because I realize that's a lot of people. Somebody that's starting out isn't going to hire 11 people. If I was just starting out and I'm trying to figure out the first position to fill, first thing I would do, I would look at some of the other wholesalers in town and what they're successful at. Most wholesalers start out in the field themselves. They'll do a few campaigns. Maybe they got a postcard campaign. Maybe they got a yellow letter or a bandit sign campaign. That's good. That's a great start. And they're on the calls themselves. They're learning how to negotiate with a potential seller. Mm-hmm. And when you get to capacity and you've sort of figured out your methodology for acquiring properties, your pitch, you've got some reputation, then I would fill in somebody to start going on those calls for you. So you've got somebody that's maybe filling sort of an inside and outside sales role. To me, that's the first hire, is then replace yourself. Once you've figured it out, you know how to acquire property, then replace yourself. Mm-hmm. Find somebody else that can do that for you so you can get back in the office and figure out how to continue marketing and growing the business. And then you just plug in people as you need them. You need an office manager, plug in an office manager. Yeah. You know, just even a $10 an hour person that's scraping the net or, you know, pulling together your lists for you.
Yeah. And something that I'll just kind of piggyback on what you're saying, Ken, and by the way, I completely agree with you that somebody like replacing yourself and somebody to handle the calls that come in from your marketing campaigns. I remember in 2005, 6, 7, and 8, like those first 3 years, I was a one man show. And so like I might be out on a date, you know, like on a Friday or Saturday night. And I remember my cell phone is blowing up with like, you know, I would send out 3,000-4,000 postcards and I got all these calls coming in. I'm like, man, do I interrupt a date to like take this call? I'd go to voicemail and it just, you know, you tend to get a bit overwhelmed with that. So I definitely, you know, agree with you that that's probably the first person you should hire is somebody to take the calls and potentially go on appointments. But one of the things I wanted to kind of just mention about what you said is that I think a lot of people have the mindset where if they're going to hire someone, they look at it as an expense, as opposed to somebody that's going to generate revenue for their business. I mean, I think it's more expensive for people not to bring somebody on board than for somebody to look at it and have the mindset, oh, I don't have $10 an hour to pay this person. My thought is, you know, you can't afford not to have $10 or $12 an hour to pay somebody. And I don't know if you would agree with that, but I think that's when I talk to a lot of people, especially those getting started, they always, you know, they always say, well, I don't have, you know, a couple hundred dollars to spend on a virtual assistant every month. And I always challenge them and I say, you don't not have, you know, like you have to have that money because it's costing you more in the long run.
Well, and the question is always, what's your time worth?
Exactly.
If you can pay somebody $10 an hour to do what you're doing, then you've basically created a job for yourself for $10 an hour.
Bingo.
Surely you're worth more than $10 an hour. So find somebody that you can plug in to do that work for you.
Yep, definitely, man. So kind of shifting gears a little bit, what are some of the tools and resources you're using to run and automate your business? Like maybe if you could talk to us what CRM you're using and then just some other tools that might be out there that investors can leverage to get back some of their time. Because, man, we live in an incredible time with technology that sometimes I'm just blown away by all the things we can do online. And so I'm always looking for ways that we can streamline and be more efficient.
You know, that's a great question. And it's funny because I know a lot of people in the space. You and I probably know a lot of the same people in the space.
Yep.
I think some people overthink it a little bit and maybe even focus too much attention on their systems. You definitely have to have a good CRM. You definitely have to have some good systems built in, but some of them are like over the top and they're wasting years of time trying to turn these things into Ferraris when you really needed was like a Hyundai and this thing would be great.
Right.
So for us, we use Podio to track our acquisitions and our motivated seller leads, but it's honestly, it's not like a souped up version of Podio. It's pretty straightforward. We basically put it together. I tell you what we do though that I think is extremely effective in generating future purchases for us is we have really good drip systems.
Okay.
And for anybody who's out there looking for motivated sellers, you will buy half of your deals on the front on the initial contact, but the other half, if not more, will come months and years later in the follow-up.
Yep.
And so you can't even measure a campaign by how many properties you bought off that campaign this month. You have to wait a year or 2 years to determine how effective a campaign was, because that's really when I find that you end up picking up deals. So it's all in the follow-up. And so for us, we've put together pretty extensive drip campaigns where we're emailing people, we're texting people, we're leaving voicemails for people. And all of that's automated. There's some killer tools out there. SlyDial is one of them. Easy Texting is another one of them. Whatever, you know, whoever you use for your email contact management, most all of them have drip campaigns built in. To me, you have to be able to take your leads and put them in some sort of drip funnel. Yeah. To maximize your dollars on your campaigns.
Yeah, no. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. We went through this exercise. We're always focused on like our key performance indicators, and every single week and month we're looking at the numbers. And we went through this exercise like 4 or 5 months ago. And I said, guys, in the last couple of years, what percentage of our deals came from the follow-up? And what we found was close to 80%, which kind of begs another question for us is what can we do better on the front end, right? Because that number, I was expecting the number to be closer to like what you said, Ken, which was about 50-50, 60-40. And man, I was kind of blown away that I think it was like maybe 77, 78% of our deals came from the follow-up. And that's because we have a follow-up system where, you know, in Podio, I kind of paid a tech guy to do this, but with the click of a button, it will automatically send a Sly broadcast to the seller. It'll drop a voicemail into their cell phone, right? So we have a 10-step follow-up system that we're constantly trying to touch our leads and our sellers in different ways. So, you know, you alluded to it, phone calls, emails, SlyDials, texting. I mean, you have to use all of the tools at your disposal. So maybe you can you kind of walk us through like how many times do you quote unquote touch a lead? And do you have you found the specific sequence that tends to work better, or is it just a matter for you guys of, you know, we're following up as often as we can?
You know, I don't even remember off the top of my head how we have those funnels set up, but I would venture to say they're getting at least one of those touches every month, if not two of those touches every month. But over the course of a quarter, let's say over 3 months, they're definitely getting all three. They're getting a text message, they're getting a voicemail, they're getting an email, sometimes twice a month. But what's funny is our campaigns, you can always tell when they go out on a given day, because you know, we got all our SlyDials set up to go at a certain time. Our phone rings off the dang hook.
That's awesome. Because
it works. Like, you know, in the office, when one of the automated campaigns went out to follow up, because all of a sudden the phones are ringing.
Yeah.
It absolutely works.
Definitely. And one thing that I'd like to add that I noticed, we started implementing this. I heard this on a podcast. I hate that I can't give credit to whoever like mentioned this. It's nothing like groundbreaking or anything, but it's just something we weren't doing, is once a month, my lead manager will export all of our seller leads in Podio, and we'll just do like, so in addition to all the different follow-up things that we're doing, once a month, we're just doing an email and a text blast to all of these sellers. And what we're finding is that we're reviving a lot of these dead leads that, even though those leads were in our follow-up system, they either weren't responding to our calls or we were just like playing phone tag, not connecting with them. And we're finding that we're probably reviving 10 to 15% of these leads that were just dead in our system. So that's one tip I'll give you that we started doing about, I want to say maybe 4 or 5 months ago, is just once a month, export all of the leads you have out of whatever system you're using and just, you know, send them an email broadcast, send them a call fire or a SlyDial campaign. And it's been something that that we've seen has kind of improved, not so much, you know, us doing deals from it, but we're connecting with more leads. And I'll say, you know, the most expensive lead to generate is the new one. So a lot of people, they're always focused on generating new leads, but they tend to kind of forget about the leads that they already have acquired, right? So awesome, man. Well, hey, Ken, listen, man, I appreciate your time. I don't want to drag this out too much. We always try to focus around, you know, 25 to 30 minutes. One of the things I like to kind of end with is, you've been in this business since 2005, so about 11 years. Kind of rewind, I'm not sure how old you are, but if you would rewind the clock to you were 20, 25 years old, what's the advice that you would give your 25-year-old self?
Well, that's a good question. You know,
and this, by the way, this can be business related. It could be mindset, just in general. Like, what's, if there was one thing, there's a book by, I think the guy's name is Gary Keller, called The One Thing, one of my favorite books. And that's, I always kind of think about, you know, that main question that he asked in the book, right? And I don't want to butcher it, but how can I focus on one thing, whereas if I did that, nothing else would matter?
Sure.
So what's that advice you would give yourself if you would rewind the clock?
You know, so interesting quick story that goes along with this. I was in Athens last weekend with my family for a Georgia game. It's where I went to school, was the University of Georgia. And I ran into a coworker that I literally hadn't seen in 11 years from my last job. And it was good to see him, and it was surprising. He was still in that same job. And I could just see on his face that he was not thrilled to be sitting in a cubicle at a Fortune 500 corporate job, you know, 11 years later. And it just dawned on me how thankful I was that I unplugged, because I was wired from the get-go to be an entrepreneur. I was the kid that was literally selling bubble gum that I bought at Sam's at school because I could turn a profit on it.
I like it.
And so sitting in a corporate job for 5 years, I worked a corporate job for 5 years, it was a great experience. I don't regret it at all, but it was so unfulfilling. And the day that I unplugged from the corporate world and went to work for myself was literally the best day of my life.
Yeah.
And I haven't turned back since. And it's not to say that it hasn't been stressful. It hasn't been hard. There haven't been challenges. But to work for yourself and to earn your own dollar on your hard work, to me, it's literally the best feeling in the world. And it's just because that's how I am wired. It's not necessarily how everybody's wired. But if you're sitting there listening to this and you're in a corporate job and you're miserable, do something about it.
Yep. Yep. No, I couldn't agree with you more, man. I'm glad that you talked a little bit about your story at the top of the show. And I had no idea that we both came from a corporate job. But when you said sitting in a cubicle, I literally got like chills up and down my spine, and not the good ones. It was like, so I think back to that. And if I just want to kind of piggyback on that, because if you're somebody that you're not happy with your job or what you're doing, make a change. I realize it's a lot easier said than done, because you might have a family, you got to put food on the table, you have expenses and bills, but life is too short to be doing something that you don't enjoy. So, you know, if you don't make a change now, you know, you might look up in 5 or 10 years and just be as unhappy, if not more. So, you know, don't be that guy or gal that, you know, is out there and in a job that you hate, and then, you know, you wake up in 10, 15 years and you're just still unhappy, because again, life is too short. So, Ken, absolutely, man, really appreciate your time, brother. What's the best place for my audience to connect with you? How can we help you and just kind of reach out to you, find out more about what you're doing?
Yeah. So you can check out the podcast. It's dealfarm.net. If you're interested in Atlanta real estate at all, we have a website at gainvesting.com as well. I'd love to hear from you, and always looking for guests, always looking for partners, always looking for private money. So feel free to check us out.
Fantastic, guys. Well, I'll catch you on the next show. Take care.
Thanks.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.